party has stolen them. No, actually, as usual, they've been mislaid here. But I will have them, I'm pretty sure, at the next show. And they will be available tomorrow at the Citizens Police Review Board in the morning. You can go in between 9 and 12 and get them, or they'll be available at the 5:30 meeting at City Hall. And, of course, they're probably also, they may be online. I don't think so yet.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I wanted to remind you that we should focus on the police department, not the Citizens Police Review Board.
Oh, don't say that. Yeah, that's an excellent reminder, caller. And do we have anything, do you have anything you wish to say regarding the police department that you think that might be relevant and, for the community to know about?
You mean besides their huge overrun budgets, the $13 million police station, the anything Belcher wants, Belcher gets, harassment of homeless people, incidences of abuse going unchecked.
I'm talking about more specific stuff that we have gotten. I mean, now these are...
No, I don't really have anything to say about the police department.
Well, I will say this. I did learn from the... I may have said this before, from the city clerk's office last week. There's been some confusion about how many votes does it take on the city council to get a new city manager. Currently, a lot of the problems can be traced to the powerful city manager, Dick Wilson, who has been the man behind the police department, behind the city's attorney's office, behind the redevelopment agency for the last 20 years.
And perhaps even behind the sleeping van.
Perhaps. Well, insofar as the police department is behind it, he's behind them, so...
I think Dick Wilson is supportive of the sleeping van.
Haven't talked to Wilson about it, but I think the question, which came up a couple years ago when the Beach South of Laurel plan was stopped by the voters, is how do we get rid of Dick Wilson? And there was this myth spreading that you need 5 votes, and they only had 4 if you counted buyers in the last city council, but according to the city clerk's office, that is not true. You can fire the city manager or replace him with a four out of the 7 city council votes, unless you are doing so within a certain time prior to the election, I believe, which, I didn't get a clear answer on that, but generally speaking, it's 4 votes. And it's also the answer to that more subtle question about if there's a difference or an additional provision for stuff before the election is in the city charter. The police chief and the city attorney are controlled by the city manager. So in order to really change them, if the city manager objects, you have to get rid of the city manager. So I did learn that. And in terms of police stuff, there is an item coming up on the city council agenda on Tuesday, which I've mentioned before at a previous show, but probably bears mentioning again. And that is in the afternoon session, it's a supplemental law enforcement services fund grant. It's a recommendation that the City Council hold a public hearing on the proposed use of money from the state of California, direct staff to include these funds to continue funding positions created with prior money appropriated in the city's previous budget. And those positions are police lieutenant, 2 homeless resource officers, and 1 police administrative assistant. And I could go on about this on the phone, or I could talk about it on the air.
Now, so is this 2 more police homeless resource officers? We already have the 1.
Well, it says to continue these positions, but it may mean actually to initiate them. It says Assembly Bill 3229, so forth, establishes the Citizens Option for Public Safety COPS program. This program allows eligible cities, which we are, to receive a proportionate share of $243,350,000 appropriated by AB 1913 in fiscal year 2000-2001 for the exclusive purpose of funding frontline municipal police services. And it's based on population estimates. Santa Cruz has received $121,502 fiscal year 2000-2001 and is available for the appropriation. To be eligible, City County of Santa Cruz must have established a supplemental law enforcement fund and an oversight committee. Aha, an oversight committee, can you imagine? The County Board of Supervisors accomplished both requirements on September 24th, 1996, and I wonder how many times that oversight committee has met.
I have never heard of this oversight committee.
No, nor have I. The purpose of the oversight committee is to ensure that SLESF, that Supplemental Law Enforcement Services funds, are being deposited and expended in the manner required by law. City Council adopted a resolution back in September of 1996 to expend monies in accordance with the law. The law requires, in case of a city, the city council shall appropriate existing and anticipated monies exclusively to fund front-line municipal police services in accordance with written requests submitted by the chief of police of that city or the chief administrator of the law enforcement agency, which provides services for that city. The law also requires that any city receiving SLESF money conduct a public hearing. That's why this motion on Tuesday is to conduct a public hearing. The public hearing will actually be held at a later council meeting, it appears to me, but this motion will authorize that, and people can speak about the issue even at this hearing. The proposed public hearing fulfills this legal requirement. So it's really a public hearing not because they want to hear it, but because it's a legal requirement. It's like oral communications. They'd rather not hear you, but they have to have the oral communications.
Now, is this a case where the funding from outside of Santa Cruz only goes for, you know, like, say, 1 or 2 years, and then the city is obligated to fully fund it by itself for, you know, years past that?
Well, this is what I heard from Scott Graham, but I've never researched it independently myself, which is that the problem with accepting these positions is that people have to continue funding them, that the city has to continue funding these positions or else they will lose all future monies. Now, I don't know if that's true. That was Scott's claim, and if he's listening in, perhaps he can call in and let us know about that, or maybe we could get some more research on that. There's a little bit more in this City Council agenda report, which I'm reading from, which is online. If folks want to get it, if you want to get the City Council online, you can go to the City Council website and find it under the agenda of March, I guess it'll be March 12th is the next City Council meeting, or March 13th, sorry. It says all these monies must be expended by June 30th, 2002, that's a year away or a year and a half away. And because 1999 SLESF funds were used to create these four new positions, the city can use 2000 SLESF funds to continue these programs and therefore not supplement local funds. Fiscal impact is my recommendation that 2000 SLESF monies continue to fund positions created in 1999. This allows the city to continue without appropriating additional general fund monies. And the amount of money is $126,000. $32,000 for the police lieutenant, $48,000 for the police analyst, and $45,000 for the two homeless resource officers. But it's a little confusing to me because they are, they say the approximate number of revenues and commitments, well, according to this, they say that it isn't requiring any additional city funding. And one of the things that Scott Graham said in his analysis of this about a couple of weeks ago when a similar matter was on the council agenda was, the problem with taking these funds is you have to keep, they usually start getting cut back within a year or two, and you have to, the city has to cover the difference. Now, it doesn't sound like that's the case with this, and this was started, according to this, in 1999, so perhaps we should revise our estimate of this. I definitely think people should express their concerns about expanding the police force in the homeless resource area without homeless input. I mean, that was one of the recommendations of the Homeless Issues Task Force, that there be a homeless involvement in any analysis of the police officers involved. What do you think? You were a kind of a watcher on that.
Yeah, the city completely ignored the Homeless Issues Task Force recommendations on how this homeless resource officer would conduct his business and what kind of oversight he would have and direction. They just appropriated the money, gave the title, and then just let the police department administer that officer his duties as they saw fit, without any input from the community, and you know, that's typical. We are talking about a department that before this already is using up 33% of the general fund of the city of Santa Cruz for police services, and I'd like to see this in correlation to what is the crime rate here in Santa Cruz. Is it really necessary? Do we need an expanded police force? I know we hear reports about unchecked drug dealing going on in Beach Flats, certain areas of Beach Flats, and I personally am kind of suspicious that when neighbors call in and complain of this, why don't they send an officer down to check that out? Are there certain neighborhoods that they don't send officers to?
You know, Becky, speaking as a devil's advocate here, we've had on the show one woman, Christina Tafoya, who complained rather vigorously, and I think quite legitimately, about police misconduct in the Beach Flats when nine officers, or up to nine officers, surrounded her and two companions and interrogated her for an hour, sometimes on the ground, in handcuffs, in the squad car with a dog barking nearby, searched her, not even using a female officer by her report, but using a male officer, for the crime of being in the, quote, park after dark. And the park, in this case, was the cement walkway kind of in front of the community trailer, which is in the Beach Flats area there. And so I criticized the police for overreacting and sending too many police officers, and indeed doing the drug war in the Beach Flats. Now, you're saying that they don't respond in the Beach Flats? Is this...
The actually, right at that section, at Raymond Street Park, there has... in fact, I was looking at some letters from to City Council from nearby residents who said that there was a great deal of criminal activity taking place in that area, and that despite calls from residents, the police had not responded. I think that there is a pattern that they let an area go for a while, and then they come in and do a big crackdown, which is maybe perhaps is what Christina Tafoya got caught up in. It serves two purposes. One, it creates in the minds of the Santa Cruz community that the Beach Flats is some sort of terrible, dangerous place that requires major urban renewal to fix. And second, that the police department, being understaffed, it needs to have a bigger budget and more officers and more authority. So I don't think it's genuine. I think it's sort of manufactured and for political purposes, and that if you look at the overall crime rate in Santa Cruz, it's very low, and we probably have more police than we need. We just need to allocate them better to have more police officers in the area where more crime is reported.
Well, maybe...
One other point I want to make. These funds, they're sort of pitched as free money to Santa Cruz, but there's no such thing as free money. The taxpayers, whether they pay federal taxes, state taxes, or local taxes, do pay for this. So I think that maybe for some bureaucrats it may be free money, but certainly not for the taxpayer.
Well, are you suggesting maybe what I hear, the idea might be that the police are acting, at least in the case of Christina Tafoya, if her complaint is accurate, capriciously, and that at other times the police, part of this caprice is not to appear at all when complaints are registered about drug dealing or whatever. I mean, I was hearing about other problems too, but that it's really not, that there should be some oversight of this that actually looks into police policies and citizens can take their concerns to. I mean, in a way, there is the Citizens Police Rubber Stamp, or Review Board, as they call it, which should be a venue for that, and is. I mean, not only are they supposed to review complaints against individual officers, but I think they also have, they can make policy recommendations, although that was a matter of some controversy. Byers claimed, first she claimed yes, then she claimed no, then she claimed yes. She was kind of, it's Councilmember Byers who helped set up this group, was called upon to answer that question a couple years ago, and the question should be answered, and not by Councilman Byers, but by the community. And the way to answer it, of course, is to, I would say, to form our own autonomous group. And
well, I think the language is clear in the ordinance that set up the Citizens Police Review Board, that they can review policy. And why they haven't is a mystery to me.
Right. Well, anything else you want to talk about, caller? I know that you were at the Green Party General Assembly yesterday, as was I, and
I do have some news to report from the Green Assembly, which is their monthly Santa Cruz County Green Party meeting, and we did pass a resolution regarding the tenants at the Lee Apartments, also in the Beach Flats, and for listeners, the Lee Apartments were considered for a project, an affordable housing project in the Beach Flats called the Dolphin Lee Project that would include three parcels of land, the Dolphin Apartments, the Lee Apartments, and the Rex Court Apartments, all on Lee Brandt Street in the Beach Flats.
And that would serve a couple hundred people, or?
Well, last, I think it was July, the City Council voted to cut the Lee Apartments out of any potential project. And now what's happening is that the City Council is making noises like they want to bring back the Lee Apartments into this their future plans for a project. And so as there was a big push about at the end of May, the organization SCAN passed a resolution about the tenants, both the Dolphin and the Lee Apartments, that they receive adequate relocation and return guarantees should any project be built. So this resolution that the Greens passed yesterday was just about the Lee Apartments. And if you're willing, I'd like to read the text of it.
Go ahead.
The Green Party of Santa Cruz County wishes to make its views known regarding the rights of residents who will be displaced from the Lee Apartments in Beach Flats. We feel that each adult resident in good standing deserves to receive written guarantees that they will be offered actual rehousing in a comparable living space located within the city of Santa Cruz, affordable to them, including sufficient and timely relocation benefits.
Yeah, that resolution actually, I guess it was originally proposed about a month ago and went to the Homeless Working Group, went to two meetings, and the Green Party took some time trying to craft this resolution. They let people go out of the room and work on it, come back, gave it extra time at the end of the meeting. I would commend them for doing this.
Well, there was an issue of timeliness involved that we really had to pass this resolution at yesterday's meeting if we were going to have any impact on the City Council and their formulation of any kind of guarantees for the Lee tenants.
Well, it is kind of a case of hurry up and wait, because while this issue did seem to be a pressing one at the last City Council meeting when the council was going to come up with a quick set of guarantees for the Lee tenants, and we wanted to make sure those guarantees included real individual contracts with each tenant that you could come back and you could be get your necessary relocation money before they bulldoze your house, or I should say your apartment. That didn't make the agenda. It was pulled at the last minute because some of the folks working with it, as I understand it, wanted to get more input from the tenants, which was good, but then they never came back to the tenants. They waited a week before I heard from them. We held one meeting, was kind of scattered, which with the information we got was that largely Lee tenants wanted to, join the project if they could, but they wanted to get the same kind of guarantees that they asked for last summer, which was in writing, explicitly, actually the same guarantees asked by SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, at their general meeting way back in May of last year. Guarantees that were shelved by the City Council. It wouldn't even be discussed by Mayor Sugar. He presented his own, a different set of guarantees, which didn't get passed, and the residents didn't even get on the table with their guarantees. So it's been a long-standing issue, and I guess there was a certain amount of internal controversy, and continues to be internal controversy in the Greens about the Homeless Working Group, one of their subgroups, bringing the issue up to City Council and announcing to City Council that they were supporting it as a subgroup, but that the Green Party itself had not agreed to it. And some folks in the Green Party were concerned that that violated the general processes of the Green Party, which forbade actions.
I'm not sure that that's entirely been resolved, because
it's still going on.
The issue did come up at the Green Party meeting about whether.
But is it worth going into? Is my question. I mean, this is sort of an internal Green thing. I'm not saying it should be private. It's not. I mean, Green Party meetings, and they're to be commended for this, are generally public, and I think that that's a very good thing. Unlike perhaps some other groups that, Fitzmaurice, for example, recently, they were going to meet with a homeless working group, but when they learned that you and I were on it, they wouldn't do that. Similarly, with another group, I mean, I'm glad.
Yeah, we're the persona non grata.
It's reasonable to not to meet with a group where people are disruptive or abusive or, you know, but that process can be controlled. And, you know, it seems.
I don't think that that's actually been the issue when they were disruptive. I think it more
right.
Has
no, what
the
I'm saying is, I'm commending the Greens for generally proceeding in an open fashion. I've been critical of the Greens, and I still am, and I'm a Green myself as of a month ago. And as soon as I turn in that that registered form, which is sitting on my desk, and I've got to get it into the county clerk, probably do that tomorrow.
A registered Green in your own mind.
Right, I'm green as turning green. Everyone's turning green with envy. Let's see, what was I saying?
You said you've been critical of the Greens, and assume that's especially regarding Tim Fitzmaurice's sleeping ban.
I think it's really, you know, you and I have discussed this, and others have discussed this on the show, and I think we took to task Nick Whitehead, who's a really well-intentioned and hard-working guy, and who's worked on the sleeping ban for years, as have we, for, you know, he was sort of the surrogate punching bag for the Green Party, for us, for me anyway, when... You know, when he defends the Green Party's, the problem with the Green Party in the last 2 years has been it hasn't done anything, even though it has in its around holding council members accountable or calling them out publicly. And part of this may stem from the fact that there is this sort of intense strain in the Green Party. Some call it, you know, the need for consensus. Some call it Gandhian. Maybe it's a combination of these, both of these things. In which, you know, it's considered you know, Tim Fitzmaurice is somehow our Green Mayor. That's the notion that he is our person, and we should sit down and talk to him and work these things out, and you know, do so in a spirit of loving nonviolence. You know, and certainly that sounds good, and if it can be done that way, I'm all for it. It's just that I've seen, and I guess you have seen, Fitzmaurice in the process of trying to deal with the issue of homeless rights for people, basic civil rights for homeless people, such as the right to sleep, and you've actually compiled a long chronology of how he has taken stands that contradict the Green Party platform on this, which is pretty explicit, no sleeping bans. They oppose sleeping bans, period. And he is, I have never heard him own up to this and say, you know, my stance does violate the Green Party platform, but I know I'm green in all kinds of other ways, so we got to agree to disagree on this. He might say that. You know, I don't know what he would say, but I've never heard him say that. Have you heard any statements from him in that regard?
Yeah, of course, we've talked to Tim Fitzmaurice about the sleeping ban and why he holds the positions that he does or takes.
Regarding the Green Party platform, does he ever explain to you or to anyone how he reconciles his position with that platform? Does he just say, no, it's a contradiction and that's just how it is, or what?
Oh, he says it's too controversial. He says that he doesn't want to bring something forward that's going to fail. He says that we have to get a community consensus. And his kind of position does kind of change from time to time. He's not extremely consistent on it.
But going back to this issue of the Green Party platform says no sleeping bans. What does he say? Does he say... I would like to, you know, put this thing into effect, but I can't because there's no community consensus? Or as you say, I've decided this really is not a good idea, that we should instead seek family shelter and other avenues. And there was, has he made a clear statement that you can remember on this issue?
No, he said that he doesn't want to do anything until he has a positive plan to move forward, or something like that.
Well, I mean, has he said that it's okay to continue violating the Green Party platform and the civil rights of homeless people
until he gets a positive plan.
I want to say I understand this. You know, I mean, I really do, because this is going to be a really, if the Green Party does take up the task here and calls Tim in to talk about this in a meaningful way, not one that just sort of says, ah, gee, shucks, Tim, we really hope you do something, but if they say, look, Tim, this is the platform, and here is your series of actions in the last 2 years. Can you tell us, you know, what's going on, and explain what are you doing and what are you not doing and where do you really stand? And of course, there's been one of the concerns I've had about, you know, that some people in the Green Party want to be very, very careful not to offend him or alienate, as Bonnie Moore puts it, our Green Mayor. And I, of course, I find that really hard to deal with, because I'm looking for how he's been green on any other subjects. Maybe he has. I mean, he has got a resolution coming on this Tuesday about, you know, ending the guerrilla war, funding the military's attack on guerrillas in Colombia, which I think is fine. And
Plan Colombia, yeah.
Right, and that was really another accomplishment of the Green Party, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. This meeting, we all voted to, or I should say consensed to, support this forum. There were some concerns about the drug war, which I found I didn't agree with, but, you know, in the interest, we certainly all agree that they shouldn't be funding an anti-guerrilla operation down there. And there was a forum for, Sam Farr is going to be holding a forum which the Green Party members are going to go to, and hopefully the whole community will go to, on, you know, the date of that forum?
I don't think it's been set.
I think it actually has, but...
In about a month, I think it is.
I thought it was 2 weeks. It was really, even in a shorter...
Weeks.
It was a
two
kind of time-conscious thing where Farr is going to be speaking on this issue because they want Farr to, you know, take some action in Congress, and I think that's commendable. Again, however, we're talking about an issue that is, you know, 4,000 miles away from Santa Cruz, although certainly these military expenditures affect us, and I raise the issue, what about the drug war here on the streets of Santa Cruz, where the DEA and the police are filling our jails with these people? You know, I don't see lines of Green Party people standing up to stop this, or, I mean, I'm not standing up in a, you know, I mean, honestly, I'm not risking my butt to stop the drug war either, although at least I would say I'm talking about it. So that was my concern on that issue. Did you, I guess you also were, you brought up a, what's happening with the whole sleeping ban issue in the Green Party? I mean, weren't they going to work on some accountability processes for Tim Fitzmaurice? Maybe you can brief us on how that's coming along. It's coming out of your, I should say, our group, the Homeless Working Group.
It's the Green Party Homeless Working Group, and that they were given the task from the General Assembly to make recommendations on a method of holding our electeds accountable, specifically Tim Fitzmaurice and his record on the sleeping ban. And,
I hope that would also apply to guys like Ed Porter, who, even though they're not Green specifically, they got Green Party endorsements.
Ed Porter did get Green Party endorsement, and he also made certain promises to the Green Party, which are as yet unfulfilled. So
specifically around the sleeping ban.
Yes. And although we did hear that...
What promises were those, by the way, do you know?
I really wouldn't like to say the exact text of it. We do have the exact text. You know, the Green Party, there was like a committee that got written responses from the candidates. And
that was, in fact, a litmus test for endorsement by the Green Party, that they decided you had to favor ending the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, and mm-hmm. I think might even been in a speedy manner.
It was kind of a point system that if a candidate did not support ending the sleeping ban, then they would lose 60% of 60 points out of 100. And then they would get
flunk.
Scored on other things. Yeah, which would, of course, just that one question, they would flunk.
Right.
That would have that effect. And so, you know, the Green, at least in this last election, made a very strong stand that the sleeping ban was something that they were not going to tolerate anymore.
Yeah, well, I mentioned Ed Porter before, and what his response has been, at least to me, on this issue, which, as the day after, I mean, they within an hour after his coronation, or his, you know, when he assumed his councilship, and he came out of council chambers, I'd been thrown out. Because I tried to present, I believe, the Golden Potty Award to the outgoing council members for failing to put in dumpsters and porta potties. He came out, and I said, "Hey, Ed, what about ending the sleeping ban?" And he said, "What are we going to do about the sleeping ban?" And he said, "End it." And I said, "Well, how do we do that?" And he said, "Well, we're going to get together later in the week and talk about it. And I'm calling some people." I said, "I will call you." And I said, "Okay." And then, of course, it's now 5 months later, 4 months later, and there's been no call.
Well, we have heard through others that Ed Porter will not meet with you or I.
Right, we have heard that, and we actually, we know that they were also, Porter and Fitzmaurice, were not returning calls to Michael Schmidt and other members of the Monday morning group that meets tomorrow at 8 o'clock at Baker Square and is open for people who want to go, focusing on criminalization of the homeless. But that recently they have agreed to meet with a select group of those people, which would exclude probably you and I.
Oh, yeah, we definitely. It would be two people, and it certainly wouldn't be you and I.
It's not that, you know, I feel like I need to be included in all these conversations. It's just that we saw this process last year where they selected a few people, cut them off from the rest of the people, and, you know, played kind of a blackballing kind of games and ended up doing nothing on the safe sleeping zones once they started getting flack from Plantronics and Texas Instruments and Catherine Byers' Cut and Run.
Well, I don't think that they really want to meet with anyone who knows too much. Because the kind of statements that they're going to make to, you know, to explain why they haven't done anything or why they can't do anything might fly with someone who's uninitiated. But with those of us who've been around the block a few times, we've heard it before. We know where the flaws are, and, you know, it just wouldn't fly. So I suspect that that's the reason why they don't want to meet with you or I, and they're sort of guising it under the fact that we're too confrontational or too disruptive or some other sort of derogatory comment on that I don't think that they can even find really a single example of if you were able to have that kind of conversation with them. I'm talking about Tim Fitzmaurice and Ed Porter.
Well, if a homeless person came up to me and said, what's the Green Party doing to end the sleeping ban now? I mean, I heard that there was something about holding Fitzmaurice accountable. Would you be positive? Would you be negative? Would you be neutral? Where is the Green Party on this issue?
I'd say we are moving in that direction, but I'm personally frustrated with the pace of it. And there are some people who want us to hold our electeds accountable, but in a very nice way, and which I don't think is really quite possible. The issue is so controversial, their records are so poor, that there's really no way that you can ask them, you know, for give an example, why did Tim Fitzmaurice recommend last summer putting a ballot initiative for the voters to decide that would make occupancy of a vehicle from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. illegal? Currently, occupancy of a vehicle is legal, so this was actually would have made the law even more draconian.
But to be honest, that was in the context of a broader elimination of the sleeping ban in public areas.
Well, yeah, it was just a very bizarre kind of crafting of ideas.
And to be even more honest, that kind of mixed message, I think, would have flown with nobody and was a sure loser, and it showed either great naivete or a hostility to the whole idea of sleeping ban reform from Tim Fitzmaurice.
I am not aware of having any reports of anybody that got any information whatsoever on how Tim Fitzmaurice came up with this bizarre language. Did he come up with it by himself, who he consulted with, what his motivations or rationale behind it? And indeed, he himself did not support his own language.
Well, the most recent...
When Chris Crone moved to table the language, he seconded the motion to table his own language. So,
well, he also tabled any kind of possibility of an initiative on the ballot, so there was nothing that even mm-hmm. the voters were allowed to deal with, which mm-hmm. was one of the last dying gasps of David Silva's campaign at that time, and he was promised that, and again he lost. They sold him out on that one as well. And I think the words sold out are not inflammatory, as some would say, but in fact accurately described. Now, sold out.
I think betrayal is even accurate.
Well, they didn't sell him out. They didn't do it for money.
Well,
but
no. I mean, I heard that there were, you know, like the Rolling Fast, and David Silva had all these people that were participating in fasting, and some of them were doing some major fasting and had lost many, many pounds in the process of this fasting for the sleeping ban. They were promised, made certain promises. They went off their fast, and then those promises were broken.
Well,
so I would call that a betrayal.
Yeah, well, I've used that phrase too. Getting back to the present, though, I guess the most recent activity, well, I we'll probably be told by optimistic members of the Monday morning group in the Green Party that the most most recent is an agreement, a breakthrough agreement for Fitzmaurice and Porter to meet with some members of the Monday morning group. My concern, of course, has been that they were going to be presenting, the Monday morning group were going to be presenting these petitions with several hundred names on it to city council publicly. They held off for 2 weeks because Fitzmaurice wouldn't put it on the agenda. He still won't put it on the agenda, but they didn't even want to talk about it at oral communications, so now they were going to do it this time at oral communications, but because he's agreed to meet with them, suddenly the skies are blue, the sun is out, the birds are singing. Am I painting this a little too...
Pulled the email up, and this was from Lydia Blanchard, who's one part of the...
Now, is this a public email? Lydia is very sensitive about emails that are not supposed to be public.
Well, she emailed it to about 90 people.
I think that since it'll be discussed at the Monday morning group, it is a public email, so yeah, press on.
They're not all greens either.
Mm-hmm.
Peace and Freedom Party people, SCAN members.
I mean, as a courtesy,
the entire organization of SCAN.
As a courtesy, it's appropriate to to contact Lydia and ask her before, revealing this email on the air. And I would appreciate that. But what's the substance of it? Without being, because it is a matter that's public, because it will be talked about tomorrow, and it doesn't say confidential at the top. And she actually talked about this, I think, at the Green Party meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's appropriate. And I'm being very, you notice I'm being very careful because you and I and others have gotten a lot of flack in Green Party emails for, I think, standing up for the rights of the homeless working group and trying to make sure that this process proceeds along. Admittedly, in our somewhat straightforward manner, which some people don't like too much and consider divisive and so forth, and one can always be wrong in what one does, and one can always have a way to do it better, but you have to also... speak your mind even if your voice shakes. I mean, the bumper sticker would have it. But again, so I guess there's at the Monday morning meeting, there's going to be a discussion as to whether to bring things to oral communications or whether that's going to all be kind of put aside because there's a private meeting between Fitzmaurice and several members of this group.
Can I get a word in here?
But go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, from what I understand, the Monday morning group had originally planned at the March 13th City Council meeting to go to the City Council and present their petition that they've been collecting signatures on for a couple months regarding the sleeping ban. And so they've decided not to present this petition on Tuesday, or at least some members here, and because there has been what is called a nice breakthrough.
I guess to cut past this, I mean, I'm always wary that the fact that the mayor and a council member agree to meet with people when they, is a good thing. But my advice to this group has always been: you need to mobilize the community because however many times these people will meet with you, they will go back 3 steps afterward if their past record is any indication. It doesn't mean we have to be locked into that, but we have to be ready for that. And you can't be ready for that unless you have the power of the community behind you. And one of the reasons to go to city council publicly is to get the community behind you. And the more you rely on private contacts, favored closed-door meetings with city council members, the less power you have in the community, as far as I can see. The more you're believing in the fact that the city council members will somehow carry the ball for you. And we've seen that generally in the past this has not been the case.
I don't think that these closed meetings have been terribly productive. We saw that when they had closed meetings regarding the setting up of the safe zones last May and June, the committee that when it was closed to the public, these negotiations of meetings, and they broke down completely, and the porta-potties never got set up, the dumpsters never got set up, the press had a field day, and the council ran the other way. Had those meetings been open public meetings, or I don't think that would have happened.
Well, I think more important that people have to, whether you holding public or private meetings, the main focus has to be on mobilizing the community. And I would encourage people who want
And the community is shut out of closed meetings.
Right. Exactly. So the community has an opportunity to come tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Of course, Huff has its own meetings, which happen irregularly, and we're interested in getting more people involved. If you want to get involved with a more activist group like Huff, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'm going to kind of press on, Becky. I only have about 7 minutes left. And is there anything more that you want to add or any announcements you have about stuff upcoming that people should know about?
I'd like people to come to our trial. That's the Coffee Klatch 3. We go on trial on March 22nd at the Santa Cruz County Courthouse, Department 6, 8:30 in the morning. And there we get to answer Anna Brooks' charges that we harassed her in Tim Fitzmaurice's office when we lifted pens, pilfered food from a food barrel, according to her, and occupied the furniture for her own personal benefit.
And asked people if they had a good night's rest the last night. Thank you, Becky, and I got to sum this up because the next talk show is, or I should say the...
You don't want to get pecked.
Story show is coming up.
You don't want to get henpecked.
I don't want to get henpecked, right. All right, thank you.
So for more information about the City Council Coffee Klatch evidentiary hearing, do give a call to 423-HUFF. We have another call. Hi there.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How you doing there, Doug?
It's all right. I was at the Green Party Assembly yesterday.
What'd you think? You got two minutes to say something.
I didn't have any time to say anything there either.
Oh, bummer. I'm sorry.
I've been trying to get on here since 12, actually.
Let me ask a little red hen if we can get a five-minute extension.
Is she already there?
I've
also been in one of those one of those meetings, you know, where a couple people go and have a meeting alone.
Right.
And close, and they don't work. They go in there and they talk to a few people that they think don't know what they're talking about, and then start saying everything they did, just like Catherine Byers did on her way out. You know, I didn't criticize her when she was saying all that crap when she was leaving and lying about everything that they've done for the homeless and exaggerating and everything. But that's the same thing they do in these small meetings. And they talk to people that have not been personally involved in the homeless issues like you and me but everyone. But they bring up things and say they're doing this and doing that other people can't question. They don't want people to question them either. I noticed it was very pablum. Oh, well, let's do this nice. And gosh, I was there ready to kick Fitzmaurice out of Green Party yesterday.
That's right.
Get him out. He's not a Green. He's a fake. He's a phony. And, you know, we don't need a phony person elected. That takes all the integrity out of the Green Party.
Refreshing. You are so refreshing to hear. You don't know how refreshing it is to hear somebody else say that. Because that's the one thing in that room that nobody would say. Did you notice that?
The one guy wanted to say something about some letter, Fitzmaurice. You know, I don't want his name on any kind of Green Party letter. I've been a Green Party member for 25 years. Also, they have some tenants here that are more like peace and freedom instead of Green Party. They don't have anything. You know, the Green Party would still be nowhere if they didn't stand up and say things loud, forcefully, for many years.
Right. Well, see, that's why it's so ironic. It's, again, you know, at the national level, they're willing to say Democrats and Republicans are the same old crap. Let's have something different. But you get here locally, and suddenly you're supposed to play ball with the local politicians in order to get on the agenda and to have, you know, maximum loving understanding and all this kind of stuff.
Sure. It's just like, well, you know, we didn't elect that Dick Wilson, but, you know, he's telling them all what they can and can't do, what is possible, you know. Well, I know all these people have these, and we'd all like to do this, but, you know, this just isn't fiscally possible.
Doug, I'd like to have you...
I can say that.
Doug, I'd like to have you on the air next time,
sure.
Actually. I mean, really on the air. If you want to come into the studio, we can actually give you some more time to talk.
Yeah, they didn't want to have anybody talk. Yeah, they didn't want to have the working group of y'alls to talk much longer.
No,
well,
they spent a lot of time intimidating us before this whole thing happened, and I think, ironically and sadly, they weren't even aware that that's what they were doing. So we're going to talk more about this, and hopefully we'll have more of this man, this man who wants to see the Greens stand up and be green, on Thursday from 6 to 8 when we come back.
Sure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's about it, almost. We have another 2 or 3 minutes left for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We did get a message about the arrest of Jim Costner. Just Man Jim is an activist who has been fighting the sleeping ban for some time. He was arrested on Thursday or Friday in San Jose, according to a report from a woman who shall remain anonymous. She was reading, actually, from the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday. Jim is accused of attacking a statue of Christopher Columbus with something like a sledgehammer. This is in the San Jose City Hall. A passerby supposedly was heard to have heard him to have said, according to the Chronicle, Christopher Columbus was a culprit in the biggest genocide this world has experienced. He was arrested for felony vandalism, and I believe may still be in jail, as well as damaging a public art. He goes to court, I believe, on Monday in San Jose. I don't have the exact time for this. He apparently, whoever did this was finished, the statue was missing a right arm, both legs, and there was only a cape connecting its torso to the podium. That's also, I want to point out that tomorrow, Monday, is not only the Monday morning group at 8 o'clock at Baker Square on the sleeping band, but at 6:30 the Mumia group meets. So that's another thing coming up. And on Wednesday at 7 o'clock, the Direct Action Network, concerned with Vandenberg and the whatever NAFTA's new big brother or little sister or whatever you will is, the Free Trade Association of the Americas, perhaps. That's meeting at 7 p.m. In the Resource Center for Nonviolence. I want to thank you for being with us here on Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Remind you, 6 o'clock on Thursday, come back. Want to get to us in between times, run into me at probably the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board at 5:30 on Monday, or the City Council meeting, 7 o'clock on Monday. Even if the mainstream advocates choose not to speak, I may still be updating the council on what I think is really going on. I want to thank the Little Red Hen for showing up on time, and so I don't have to fumble with all these tapes and look for her show. And please stay with her. She's got some stuff for you to hear. Thanks for being with me.
When she danced on the waters and the wind was her horn, the lady laughed and everything was born. When she lit the sun and the light gave him birth, the lord of the dance then appeared on the earth. Dance, then, wherever you may be, for I am the lord of the dance, and me. I'll lead you all, wherever you may be, and I'll lead you all in the dance, and me.
Okay, CPRB, March 12th, 2001, 525, or thereabouts.
I'd like to introduce two new board members, David Rowland, who is appointed by Mark Klimak, and Brent Faust, who's appointed by Emily Nyland. Welcome, both have come through the initial orientation and are full-fledged members. Want to call the roll?
Board Member David Brown?
Yep.
Board Member Jim King?
Present.
Board Member Brent House?
Present.
And Board Member Sandra Brown? Board Member Becky Black?
Here.
Sandra is here. Vice Chair Tony Barrera?
Here.
And Chair Arnold Black?
Are there changes to the agenda? Reorder the leading items on the agenda.
Yes, Becky. We have been asked by
all communications down a ways since there are two people coming that would like to speak at all communications but were able to make the 5:30 deadline.
Actually, one of them has arrived and the other isn't coming, so I think
okay.
We can't proceed.
Okay. Never mind.
Anything else? Okay. Minutes of February 12th meeting. Need a motion to approve, or are there any changes?
I'm moving that. Minutes to approve.
Is there a second? Any discussion? Mr. Nunes.
Yes, I wanted to just mention with respect to these minutes that I really appreciate the extensive and detailed treatment, particularly of the public input. I think it makes the public feel that there's a point in speaking, even if we feel the board isn't listening and responding, that some record is being kept of what's being said. And while I'm often critical of what the board does, I do appreciate it that there is a record being made. And thank you very much, and I quickly thank whoever did these minutes, and I suspect it's the person over here.
Any other comments? All in favor of approving the minutes as presented, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are passed unanimously. All communications, this is a time set aside for the public to address the board on any item not on the agenda. So whoever would like wishes to address the board on items not on the agenda, please step up.
Is this board saying
the
Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag? No, we don't. Would you, we have not been doing that.
I would like to maybe flag for it. I mean, why don't you do something that's American for once?
If you would like to come to the microphone, you have 3 minutes.
Well, you see, if I do that, then you won't hear my speech. So, you know, people can't say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I'm ashamed of you, Mr. Lee, Arnie Lee. Head of Internal Affairs of all mankind. You don't have to even look like this. But there is one. Stands, one nation, under God, indivisible.
2019. I will protect and serve all of humanity with respect and dignity for everyone, and I suggest the police department does it too. Thank you. Should have heard the rest of it. It gets better.
Any other individuals to speak?
Good evening. I'm Becky Johnson. And welcome to the two new members of the Police Review Board. I want to talk tonight about the important task that the Citizens Police Review Board has, I believe, thus far neglected, and that is making recommendations about policies at the Santa Cruz Police Department. And I want to talk about four different areas that I hope in the future that you will address these policies. The first one, which was mentioned by the last speaker, is about the drug war and how it plays out here in Santa Cruz. The second issue I want to discuss is the use of alcohol stings, the recent shoulder tap law, the use of minors in those stings. The third issue I want to talk about also has to do with the alcohol outlets and that there's been excessive or monitoring of alcohol, the vendors in the city, and there have been some concerns about how that's been conducted. And the fourth issue I'd like to talk about are stings for prostitution that I think have inherently some human rights violations involved. My concern about the drug war is that all research data does indicate that treatment and education are the most effective approaches to reducing or eliminating drug abuse. The incarceration model is far too costly. It stigmatizes those who are arrested and convicted of drug possession, use, or sales. It prevents those people from being able to get employed. It prevents them from being able to get into housing. It increases homelessness on our streets. It prevents people who are currently homeless from getting their lives back together. It disrupts family, causing huge costs of sums of money and stress on family. And children suffer greatly when their parents are incarcerated and separated for long periods of time, something those children are undoubtedly not responsible for. It costs a great deal of time and money with lawyers, courts, and police department resources, which should be wisely used in any case. I'm also concerned in the drug war about the harassment of medical marijuana patients who should be able to use medical marijuana effectively without fear of being arrested or cited. The second issue I want to talk about is this alcohol stings using minors. I'm just concerned. It bothers me that minors are used both with this new shoulder tap law, a law, by the way, that isn't against the law in any other city. It's our brand new law that is kind of another one of these make-work activities on the part of the police department. I just question the ethical use of using these minor decoys to entice people into purchasing alcohol for them and then arresting them should they succumb. Third issue, it's about the monitoring of the bars. I know I've heard testimony from bar owners here saying that that they were really had a number of concerns about how they've been treated with police cars parked in front of their bars for hours at a time, where they, as regular business owners, are supposed to report if there are any crimes occurring in that block that they're on that they are aware of or their customers inform them about. And yet when they make that report to the police department, it goes on a record, and that record is held against them later about these practices, because these practices are inherently unjust and they must be ended, and they shouldn't be charged against an individual officer. It's obviously a policy of the Santa Cruz Police Department. And the fourth issue, which is a great concern to me as a mother, as a woman, as the mother of a daughter, and that is the stings for prostitution, where we are asking female officers to dress up in sexually provocative clothing and go down into areas of our city that have been known to have prostitution and to entice and entrap. From what the reports I have, they were very poor Mexican men who are far away from their homes and families and their wives and their girlfriends working in this country. And these stings are conducted right around payday when these men get their payment, and they're offered to have sex with a beautiful woman for $40. And they catch them by the dozen in these sting operations, and they are disgusting. And it's disgusting that we ask our female police officers to degrade themselves in this way as part of their employment. So these four issues are a great concern to me, and since this board has never, to my knowledge, addressed a single policy issue of the Santa Cruz Police Department's five-year history, I think it's long past time, and I would be willing to file that complaint as a policy situation if that would facilitate this. Thank you.
Bad things in that area, and bad things do happen, but that shouldn't penalize everyone who's there.
I would encourage you to file that complaint. I would also encourage you to have anybody else who has similar complaints file a complaint, because that's the only way we're ever going to be able to understand this complaint.
I also wanted to say something just for the record. I mean, I may have made mistakes on the names of officers who I was thought to, you know, be there, but that is only because I was refused information. I can't, you know, be completely certain when I'm asking someone their name and they're cursing at me and walking away, when it's a city official, someone, it's their job to give me their name and their badge number when I ask for it. And when I'm refused that information, it makes it a little bit difficult to find out who, and I want to apologize to the officers who maybe I did get their names wrong or faces wrong, but it doesn't get away from what happened to me.
You had just mentioned in the complaint that you weren't sure of the names of the officers. We usually can find out who the officers were, so that's not a problem for us.
I also wanted to say that I think that the police department could have been a little bit more helpful on the situation instead of just sending. When I went to court, they did send one officer there who I believe was, I'd call him maybe a decoy or some sort of, I don't even know what to say about that, but I'd like to see something happen about this, and I'm not gonna stop until I do.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
The people that you were with, are they
Are
you listed as witnesses?
I listed one. I don't think that he'd come, because a lot of people just, I mean, you'd be surprised how many of these being in the park after hours tickets are given to people in the Beach Flats area. And people just say, you know, oh well, I might as well pay it. There's nothing we can do about it. We go and tell them that we didn't do it, but people, we go to the courtroom, which is not even, I mean, I'm sure he's a real judge, but it's not a jury. It's not someone who's sitting there listening to every word you have to say and questioning the police officers. I told the judge what happened to me, and he said, officer, is this true? Well, yeah. But it still didn't stop anything, didn't make anything change. That's another thing. It's not even, well, it's a basketball court in front of the community center.
Other questions?
Yes, how many other people have told you personally that this happened?
I have another person who I had to speak with. She went to court and her case was thrown out due to, how can I say this? He kind of used his power wrong, I'm guessing. One of the officers that was also there the night of the incident that happened to me.
One other person?
I've heard from many other people, though. It wasn't just, the night of my incident, there was three people there. It was three of us laying on the ground at 12 o'clock at night.
And one other person said that this had happened to him.
But I mean, it's happened to many people that I know. I can't give you a number.
How do you know that?
From talking to people, that's where I live, that's where I've lived all of my life, it's what I've seen all my life. You see things happen, but nobody can say anything because maybe most of the time they are doing something wrong. But that doesn't excuse the behavior of an officer. When someone is doing wrong, there's guidelines that you need to follow, policies that need to be followed. You can't just do anything you want. Why, oh, that's the drug dealer, I can do that to him anyway because he's doing something wrong. That doesn't justify their behavior.
Besides this one incident, have you ever seen this happen yourself or anyone else?
Yes, I have.
How many times?
I probably couldn't count them on my fingers.
What were the rude comments about?
Can I curse here?
Sure, can.
Shut your fucking mouth. You talk too goddamn much. Your big fucking mouth is gonna have you go to jail tonight. Just repetitive comments like that.
Okay.
I also have a question. When will I receive some kind of...
That's hard to tell. It'll probably be at least a couple of months. It usually takes about 60 days, sometimes longer, to complete the investigation.
And while the investigation is going on, would I be... What, am I still going to have to... Like, they sent me things saying that I was going to have to pay this fine, and I refused to pay that.
We really don't have any control over that at all.
So I'd have to go through the court and appeal that?
You have to go through the court process.
Well, thank you for listening to me.
Councilmembers Robert Norris, regarding the last speaker, I spoke to you about this incident, I think, at the previous meeting, and the CPRB, I'm sorry, the Metro Santa Cruz, has had a story on her as well. I've interviewed Christina for Free Radio. I do a show twice a week, and I just wanted to point out that she probably was a little nervous there, and there's something she didn't tell you, like there was a male searching her. This was one of her concerns, if I'm not mistaken. She's a female. She didn't mention to you that, she did mention to you the rude and intimidating series of questions she was asked, but this was done in the context of her wanting to know the badge numbers and names of the officers, of whom there were up to 9 officers, as I understand from what she told me before, possibly up to 9 officers. She couldn't get the names. They asked, finally, an officer of color, the original officers were white officers, to come over and issue the parking ticket. Originally, they claimed to be stopping her for another cause, which was some kind of a fight that had happened somewhere else. They actually didn't, as I understand from my original account, they didn't get into why they were stopping. They just demanded she lie down on the ground. And apparently, clothing that was not old and ragged, so dirty her clothing. There's a whole number of issues here. There was another woman who was a companion of hers that Mr. King asked about whether other instances of this had happened. A woman named Angelina Huertas, who she mentioned, also had this problem, couldn't come tonight, and has been reluctant to speak about it publicly, but she herself was charged with resisting arrest around the same area. I believe it was, I'm not sure if it was a month later or a month earlier. And the reason the judge threw it out was she was a very slight woman, the officer was a big guy, and there was no underlying charge. We've seen this happen before. So I think there are some serious concerns here that really can't wait. It's not going to be 2 months, as I believe the chair would hope, if there were an expeditious process. It's likely to be up to 6 months, as we find if we look at the number of the complaints today, we find that some of them are as old as 4, 5, or 6 months to review. So what happens is these cases get buried, unless they are publicized. And that's, I think, to me, a key thing about getting any kind of change, or perhaps, as Becky Johnson suggested to you, you need to consider a public hearing into policies in the beach flats, and whether, as Mr. King legitimately asked, is this a repeated practice, or is this simply an isolated incident of some rogue officers, 7 or 8 rogue officers, perhaps, who knows? That's, of course, the question. I want to briefly also thank Chair Leff on a number of grounds, because I'm going to be attacking him rather strongly on other grounds. I want him to know that I appreciate his being liberal in oral communications. I think this is a key part of this board's function, is hearing the public. You may think your main function is going through these files and police reports. No way. But your real job, I think, is to get the public to come here and talk to you about what's going on. So I have great respect for every expansion you can do of oral communications, even from people who are highly critical of you. I think that's a key, important factor. I also respect it even for people who are abusive. And there are people last time who were abusive and even threatening to this board. And I was going to suggest to you in those circumstances the board continued to use the kind of patient methods which I saw Chair Leff using, and I saw it used by Mayor Celia Scott in the past, to simply continue to remind the speaker that they're talking so loudly that their voices are getting distorted, and that they please keep it a little quieter. In other words, continue to work with the people, and I appreciate when it's done. I did speak to the Commissioner for Prevention of Violence Against Women about the Tafoya case, and I believe that she is going to that board as well, and hopefully they'll be able to raise the issue with respect to the police department's treatment of women if there's some problem in terms of men searching women there. I know that Chair Leffa said the board can't take seriously complaints that are not written, and hence I request people come to the board and make written complaints, even though I'm constantly disparaging the board's ability to do anything about that, or its will to do anything about that. But I again believe the public doesn't take the board seriously because it doesn't hold these public hearings and has taken no action moving for mandatory investigation of serious complaints. You know, refuses to consider subpoenaing officers and declines to review at least some complaints in a timely manner. And all these are true allegations which the new board members can find are true by talking to the older board members. Last time I spoke to you at some length, I didn't finish what I was going to say, and I extended my remarks and wrote them down and passed them out to you. I'm going to speak just very briefly on that since you have a copy. These are very strong remarks, and they do deal with the personal political records of members on this board that I'm concerned about. And I present it because I think the public needs to know. They need to know that there have been, and the new board members need to know that there's been no action on key issues brought to this board for the last 6 years, such as racial profiling, such as homeless harassment, such as conflicting standards of evidence. The police department has one, the CPRB has another. They don't get into independent investigation as a mandatory process, which they need to do, which I was promised 2 years ago would be an issue that would be soon up on the agenda by the chair. And when these promises are simply ignored, this leads those of us who want reform to either, you know, go ballistic and get more critical and harsher in our criticism, or simply to walk away, leaving you guys alone and, you know, less powerful than you were before if you had an organic connection to the community. We have this committee, which the chair will tell you about, which is the City Council Citizens Police Review Board Subcommittee. I don't see it on the agenda. Maybe it's here. I don't see any hearings announced. This committee is originally one of the reasons why Mr. Aronson was hired and is being paid his salary. But that committee has met once throughout the last year. Not every month, not twice a week, or twice every month, not once every 2 months, but once. This is the committee could empower this board to do something that it's not doing. And I really think that if the new board members can exercise some strong influence here, they might begin to speak out on it. I also would encourage the board and the new board members to consider a kind of orientation that isn't just ride-alongs with the police department, which I don't think are a bad thing to do. I'm glad that they're happening. They're obviously necessary, not just to review the rules, not just to review the videotapes, but come to the communities that have the most vulnerability and the most concerns but are the least visible at this board. Communities of color, gay communities, homeless communities. Talk to activists who have been police critics, even if you feel like they're wild and crazy and far out. Talk to them, because I think that's a way to really understand a series of continuing criticisms which, well, from my perspective, have a whole history of truth to them that is being ignored by the board and by the City Council as well. There's also, a policy I suggested at the last meeting or the meeting before, which would be that the board look into claims by the city that were paid out to people for police department misconduct. Money, sums of money. If you find the officer's name is repeating again and again, then it's appropriate to start considering what's going on here. Are these officers still on the force? Were they promoted? Were they discharged? This is something this board has never done or never looked into. And it's as easy as contacting the risk manager and getting a list of the names of all the officers and the claims that have been paid out in the last 10 years. It's not a difficult matter to do. I'm also concerned that I would encourage you new board members to hold public sessions where you actually have constituents can come and talk to you about their concerns. Board members Blythe and Brown used to do this, but stopped doing it for different reasons. I think it was a very good thing that they were doing. They were giving people an opportunity to come and talk to you individually, let's say, put policy matters on the agenda, bring issues to you, because, frankly, the chair of this board is very, very inaccessible. It is very hard to get the chair to put anything on the agenda, even if you're a board member, much less if you're a member of the public. And I don't say that because I have a personal hostility to Arnie, but because I believe that he simply operates in a certain way. He puts on board on the agenda what he thinks can be done and what is best and what should proceed, but issues like racial profiling keep getting kicked ahead again and again and again and again, and we don't see stuff done on those issues. I'm also concerned about absenteeism on this board. We have a situation with, for example, board member Brown, who has been promising to resign for the last 2 years because of overwork, but apparently regards herself as invaluable and shortchanges the public here. While I am in sympathy with her votes, I believe she must step aside so those who with more time can take over. Instead, she takes on more jobs, ranging from the Living Wage Coalition, the campaign manager of the Scott Buchenthal, while police reform rots in the black box into which the chair has resigned it. And not surprisingly, Brown's candidate lost the election. However, I don't think the CPRB can play second fiddle here in these cases. I mean, if you look at the absentee record, you'll find that that's, in fact, the case. I like Sandy as a person. It's not a personal attack.
Do you have any substantive comments?
Well, I think these are substantive in terms of absenteeism. I'm concerned about absenteeism on the board, and that's what I'm talking about. I think this is completely substantive, and I think the board needs to, and the public needs to know.
We've heard you about that issue.
Right. I don't know why you need to interrupt me on that issue, but...
Because I'd like you to go on so we can do some real business.
Yeah, I believe, I'm hoping that this can assist you in real business. I'd like to see some...
It hasn't in the last 2 years.
That's not my fault, I would say to the chair.
Okay.
Finally, a word about the chair's patriarchal and undemocratic processes. It is bad enough CPRB conceals its votes on all cases. The board could make those votes public, but that would tell who's backing the police department and who's not. But even in the regular public meetings of the board, Chair Leff uses a capricious shorthand approach in which sidesteps regular votes. You'll find this happening. The chair will not take a vote. He'll say, okay, we'll move right along. We'll just go right ahead without taking a formal vote. If you examine the tapes of the last few meetings, you'll find this happens regularly and frequently. In other forums, the chair has expressed a distaste for the Brown Act, which requires open meetings and public input, preferring to operate behind closed doors. And this is what we have seen, again, with this key committee, which should be dealing with ordinances, law changes that will strengthen this board, but have been completely ignored for the last 2 years. Originally, this ordinance committee was supposed to meet as the chairship of Arnie Leff. He was the individual controlling this subcommittee. He held no meetings whatsoever. Then the city council formed a joint committee to meet on this issue. One meeting was held in the last year. And so I would ask you to inquire into this, talk to homeless advocates and police reform advocates about this. And I want to thank you, and again, thank Chair Leff, for showing a tolerance for oral communication, which I think is very important. And you have this letter to look at, and I'll hopefully be addressing you on other items, which I hope you will do something about in the next 2 years.
Just for the new members of the board, a couple comments. Number one, it would be interesting to let you know that any board member has the right to contact me, that I am among the most successful people. And if you have any agenda items that you'd like to be put on the board agenda, we also have it on selection of the future. Future agenda items in item 7, which is always on the agenda, so that any board member does have the right to request the agenda item, or to even go to our staff person and ask them to put it on the agenda if there's a problem getting in touch with me, which I'm sure none of you have had. With regard to votes, if there's ever an item that any individual on the board believes needs to be voted on, and I seem to not recognize that. I think the older members of the board know they have the right to say, hey, wait a minute, and you do as well. So if there's any questions, we can deal with it that way. As far as the ordinance committee is concerned, that has not met. I agree with Mr. Norris that we need to do something about that. But the members of that committee, for the most part, no longer exist, except for a couple of people on this board. And so that needs to be reformed, and hopefully the City Council will do that. But that is the City Council's responsibility. With that, I would like to move on to regular board business. Report and complaints filed, complaints ready for review.
We have two new complaints filed. Actually, one is on the agenda, one came in on Friday after the post-mortem appointment. It's a 2001-005 complaint against Edward Gardner. The allegation is conduct, unreasonable, unprofessional attitude. And that's ready for review. That is not a new complaint. It's a new one ready for review. I've asked for an extension on that since we've been meeting on this agenda. Also, there's also a listing of ones already there. One amendment to 2028. The date of incident and date of complaint filed states that it was in September. It was actually in November on these dates. So, no changes on those.
members, if you look at the complaints ready for review in your agenda packet, you will see the incredible lag in time for some of these complaints that happens inside the police department. And what I requested at the last meeting of the board was that this board request formally some specific information from the police department about how many folks are working on the on these IA complaints, how long an average complaint takes, and what this actual process is in terms of time and resources, because maybe this is budget time, that there needs to be more resources allocated to the IA division in the police department. That may be a possibility. This budget analysis discussion is something that won't wait. Unless you guys act and you women act now, you're going to find, and there's, for example, a policy meeting coming up on March 20th at the Civic Auditorium. The heads of commissions are meeting for budget priorities. Even though the budget isn't considered until the summer, you need to act very swiftly to get some input into the budget. For years, you've been trying to do that. So I would encourage you to consider this lag in time. That's one point. The second point is, how many complaints have fallen through the cracks because this board has failed to meet in a prompt way? We know several have. I know one of mine did. Not because I filed late, but because this board chose not to meet because of its own preferences and the busy schedules of its own members. Now, that, of course, is an irresponsible situation. It's a bad situation. And I know that at least in one or two cases, the chair and the board have attempted to rectify that in some of the complaints. But I would like to get the stats from the staff and from the board as to how many complaints have been dropped in the last 2 years because this board failed to meet. And I would also like to, you know, I see that I may be, in fact, preempting myself. If this is on the agenda tonight, I apologize if it may be.
Well, there are some of these items.
Right, so I'll step back on that issue. It's just those are two concerns I have. Finally, a third concern, which again I would love to hear a board member raise here, and I've heard board members raise this privately with me at different times, but you know, at the board meetings these members are silent, and that question is, how about letting the public know who votes how on votes? Now, you don't have to reveal your votes, but you have the power to reveal your votes. It's not an IA file, it is not private. You can choose to do so. If you choose to conceal it, don't you in fact make the public say, well, you know, in some sense we're concealing our positions on these issues, on whether this complaint should be sustained or not. So I would encourage you to look at this and note that the votes are not here on this schemata. And I would encourage you to in fact take action so that this doesn't happen again, that those votes are available.
I didn't realize oral communications were coming to a close. I just wondered if I could introduce myself to the panel.
Sure.
Hello. I know some of you, but not all of you. My name is Joe Havey. I'm a lieutenant in the police department. I run their investigation section. I oversee the final work product of what our investigators do. That's the rapes, the homicides, the batteries, the hate crimes, child molestations, you name it. It comes across my desk eventually. And it's a little awkward for me speaking at a public meeting like this, but I've been sitting in the back for a while, and after just the barrage of disinformation, I just thought I'd just come up here, introduce myself to you, and tell you that if you're interested in anything or if I can provide any information, you're always welcome in my office. Give me a phone call. I work Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and I also have a pager. I don't mind getting paged and returning the call, but you know, if I can help unravel something for you, I'm more than willing. So I just thought I'd put that out there for what it's worth. I've been with PD 29 years. I value honesty and integrity, and I live up to that level. So those that know me know they get a fair deal out of this. So I just want to introduce myself, and thank you for letting me just come up. Okay? All right.
The next agenda item is a presentation by Officer Seeley with regard to the Homeless Resource Officer. Come up, please. I might just prelude this a little bit by saying that my understanding that the city has funded two homeless resource officers, and that currently there's only one, and that's you. So
right. Staffing levels, we're still filling at them. My name is Eric Seeley. I'm a police officer in Santa Cruz. I've been there in my seventh year now.
Sorry, go ahead.
Diego in 98, November of 98, and listened to a presentation by San Diego in regards to their homeless outreach team. I was very impressed by their officers and what they intended to do and what they were trying to do, which was combine police officer with a mental health slash social services worker who actually went out into the field to interact with the homeless and start bringing services to them instead of expecting them to come to the offices or make appointments a week down the line. They felt that they were very successful. I actually went down there and spent the day